Support for this public radio podcast comes from the Society for Human Resource Management, which also sponsors PBS's CEO Exchange, online at shrm.org.
A hot cup of doom and gloom.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Goldman Sachs started our morning with some economic predictions for 2008. Here we go. There will be a recession. The Federal Reserve will cut interest rates from the current 4.25% to 2.5% by about September. The unemployment rate will hit 6.5%, at least in 2009. It's at 5% right now. As for stocks, Goldman is giving a thumbs up to healthcare, energy, and companies that make things people need. A thumbs down goes to financial stocks, IT, and companies that make wants instead of needs. Wall Street is very nervous about all that, and investors start getting fourth quarter earnings reports today. They'll probably be covering their faces, afraid to look. But so far, a little bit of buying on Wall Street. The Dow is up 84 points to 12,673. The NASDAQ has gained 11 to 2,452. And the S&P 500 is up 3 points. In London, shares are down 1.5% late in the trading day. The Asian markets bounced back a little today with some minor gains. Today, British Airways said it plans to fly new routes between Europe and the U.S. starting in June. These flights won't be going through London either. We get more from Ashley Milne-Tite.
British Airways says its first flight to mainland Europe will be from New York to either Paris or Brussels. The majority of seats on the new flights will be in business class and premium economy. Joe Brancatelli runs business travel website joesentme.com. He says BA is tainted in many Europeans' eyes thanks to massive bag losses and other airport debacles on its home turf. But the US public doesn't hold the same view. He says American flyers are fed up with American carriers and willing to try a rival. And Paris is a big business destination for U.S. travelers. Still,
let's say this is a lot riskier venture than it looked like this time a year ago. You know, the economy is softening. There's much more competition.
He says the new service will be a subsidiary airline, and it has a big-pocketed corporate parent in BA. But at the same time, he says BA is lumbered with internal politics and other social issues that wouldn't hamper a startup airline. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
If Barack Obama had won New Hampshire last night, you might have seen a shift in campaign contributions. Donors love to hitch up to a candidate with momentum. Instead, Hillary Clinton's victory might make the Democratic money hold off for a bit. Danielle Carson has more from Washington.
The race for the White House is spotlighting donors' biggest fear, picking the wrong horse.
They don't want to feel that they have given money to a losing cause, that they've made a poor investment.
That's Sheila Krumholz with the Center for Responsive Politics. She says Democratic candidates are wooing the big unions because their endorsements deliver canvassers and ultimately votes. She says they don't want to back a loser and marginalize their impact down the road. Hollywood has invested around $2 million in both Hillary Clinton's and Obama's coffers. But forget loyalty. American University analyst James Thurber says the entertainment industry wants to throw its financial support behind only one contender, and they love fresh faces. Faces and Hollywood endings.
They want to back a winner, and you'll see a shift of those giving money and those giving endorsements to the person who's out in front.
But sticking with the long shot, who ends up winning, has its own rewards, like a position with the new administration. In Washington, I'm Danielle Carson for Marketplace.
In Hong Kong today, there was a big toy industry expo. All the talk was about how Chinese toy companies are rebounding from all those recalls last year. Give China's government an assist. It launched a serious publicity campaign to assure the world that Chinese products are safe. Let's bring in our correspondent Bill Marcus in Shanghai. Bill, has that campaign worked?
The evidence is in the pudding. Year-on-year growth of $11.5 billion in the first 11 months of 2007, according to government numbers. 20% growth in orders month-on-month. So the way the association reads it, yeah, it's working. The buyers feel comfortable enough coming back to the show.
And what are Chinese toy manufacturers attributing their success to then?
The head of the Guangdong Toy Manufacturers Association, he says that that's evidence that consumers have understood what China has been saying, that it explains why things went wrong, how they're going to make them better, and that it indicates that there is faith and trust in the manufacturers of toys in China.
Bill, what are manufacturers saying about the price of toys for this year?
They say get ready to pay a little bit more. There's a new labor law that took effect on the 1st of January in China. That means that workers' conditions and salaries and the benefits that are paid to them are going to go up. The cost of quality control, making good on all the promises, is going to drive prices up, and so will higher prices for raw materials.
Okay, Bill Marcus in Shanghai, thank you.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Wednesday, January 9th on Marketplace.org. European plane maker Airbus had a pretty rough time of it last year. Delays in building planes, the weak dollar is hurting its business. But today, Airbus clinched a huge deal with a plane leasing company in Ireland. And it might start to turn things around a bit for Airbus. More now from Megan Williams.
It's a strong takeoff for Airbus in the new year. An order of up to 100 jetliners to the Irish AWAS for almost $7 billion. With figures last year showing the European Airbus orders soaring just below the U.S. Boeing's, the pressure to surpass its rival this year is intense. Last year, Boeing took almost 1,400 orders for jets, while Airbus has reported 1,200 as of November. It's expected to announce its final count for 07 next week. Still, both figures outdo the industry high from a few years ago of over 1,000 orders a year. Despite flying high, however, analysts predict this year sales will likely be headed down. I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
Yesterday, the Federal Trade Commission opened public hearings on the issue of environmental advertising. Those guidelines haven't been updated in a decade. And of course, since then, a lot more companies have been marketing themselves as green. The FTC is worried that some of those companies are deceiving people. Marketplace keeps an eye on so-called greenwashing through a team of online critics called the Greenwash Brigade. Our sustainability reporter, Sarah Gardner, caught up with a couple of them.
You know we're in trouble when the experts are confused, too.
I am a very educated consumer, and I struggle with these choices on a day-to-day basis.
That's Jana Flissrand, a green housing advocate. She's on our Greenwash Brigade, looking out for eco-deception and fraud. Flissrand says right now there's a rush of products claiming to be green. She'd like the FTC to come up with something like a good housekeeping seal of approval.
And I like the idea of a score, where the lower the score is, the less environmental damage there is created.
Flissrand suggests the scores might cover everything from greenhouse gas emissions to toxicity to labor standards.
But something simple that's quite comprehensive and that consumers can understand is key.
The FTC will specifically tackle carbon offsets. That's where consumers pay others to reduce greenhouse gases if they can't themselves. But some offsets have turned out to be scientifically suspect or even outright frauds. And the offsets often occur in remote places where consumers can't verify them. Greenwash Brigade member Heidi Siegelbaum says offsets are dangerous territory for eco-neophytes.
Unless they do a tremendous amount of studious research, it's very difficult to understand what it is exactly that you're buying. And of course, there's also the additional allure of offsetting guilt.
The FTC has its work cut out for it. Even our Greenwash Brigaders don't agree on whether the agency should craft a working definition of sustainable. Flissrand says yes, Siegelbaum says no. Siegelbaum says sustainability means different things in different contexts, and so it's different for every industry, including the news business. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, I'm Sarah Gardner.
¶¶ Trade between China and Africa is 8 times what it was just a decade ago. That's probably why Chinese officials love to visit Africa so often. China's foreign minister is making the rounds this week. His first stop, the economic powerhouse of South Africa. Gretchen Wilson reports from Johannesburg.
China is now South Africa's biggest trading partner. Bilateral trade is up 35% last year alone. And China's leading bank just bought a $6 billion stake in Standard Bank Group, South Africa's biggest lender. No specific trade deals were penned at this meeting, but economic cooperation is at the heart of everything. Take peacekeeping in Darfur and elsewhere in Africa, a big agenda item for this visit. Martin Davis is director of the Center for Chinese Studies at Stellenbosch University.
I think both China and South Africa have certainly aligned interests, strategic interests, in resolving conflict on this continent, particularly where both countries have a significant business or corporate presence in key markets.
Yang Jiechi is now in the Democratic Republic of Congo to finalize an $8 billion deal to develop that country's mining industry. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
The trade agreement NAFTA is now 14 years old, and it's still being debated. This week, Mexico's president defended NAFTA against protesting farmers. The presidential candidates are making free trade a big issue. Commentator Will Wilkinson says NAFTA actually didn't go far enough.
There are some who believe a grave threat to American sovereignty looms over the horizon. A shadowy cabal, they say, is planning a massive NAFTA superhighway, a new North American currency, and a common market in goods and labor. It will all culminate in an EU-like North American Union. It turns out this is mostly fantasy. But the fantasy is more dream than nightmare, because some aspects of a North American Union would leave Americans and our neighbors both richer and freer. The population of undocumented migrants in the U.S. has grown rapidly in recent decades, in part because we have implemented increasingly restrictive border policies. What we've done is make passage riskier. This has slowed in migration. But those who do come now are more likely to stay. And this has increased the permanent population of undocumented Mexicans. The best solution to America's immigration problem is not a wall or a new crackdown on the hiring of undocumented workers. It's NAFTA's unfinished business, a common North American labor market. It's illogical and impractical to create a single North American economy that integrates markets for goods, capital, raw materials, services, and information, but tries to keep labor markets divided. Mexico's GDP per capita is about what Poland's was in 2004. That was the year Poland became a part of the EU and started sending a large flow of newly legal migrant workers to a much wealthier Britain. This neither increased British unemployment nor overtaxed social services. It's been a boon to both the British and the Polish economies, and a higher percentage of Polish workers now circulate back home. Romania and Bulgaria are even poorer than Mexico, but they are now set to integrate their labor markets with the rest of the EU in 7 years. If they can do it, then so can we. And if a humane and effective policy of labor mobility is what a North American Union would deliver, then what is there to fear?
Will Wilkinson is a policy analyst at the Cato Institute in Washington. For a link to his blog, visit our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.